Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
All right, we're shifting gears. We've got a half hour left of this version of Your Turn, the program that I've dubbed Meeting Nonsense with Common Sense. And I know the listeners out there, when I tell you what the next subject matter, are going to scratch their heads and say, first of all, Renee, shouldn't we have been talking about this, you know, months ago when everybody else was, and that's all you could hear or read about? You know, all you turned on the TV and all you heard about was Anna Nicole Smith, or you picked up the paper and all you read about was Anna Nicole Smith. So I know you're going to say to me, you're a little late on this, Renee. You know, and then the other part of you're going to say to me, what do you mean we're talking about Anna Nicole Smith? What in the world does that have to do with real news, which is what we try to talk about most of the time here on at least my version of Your Turn, Meeting Nonsense with Common Sense, because I learn a lot from the listeners, and I appreciate that. In fact, Jim was just filling me in on a lot of very interesting information. But I promise you that if you stay tuned to this segment, when we do talk about Anna Nicole Smith and the issue of form shopping, you're going to see why it's important for us to pay attention to this issue and why we need to be talking about it today. We needed to be talking about it absolutely 3 weeks ago, and we're probably going to need to be talking about it in 3 weeks. And to help us understand this issue, I'd like to welcome to Your Turn Horace Cooper. He's a visiting assistant professor at the George Mason University School of Law, just outside of Washington, D.C. He holds a B.A. in government from the University of Texas in Austin, and he served as counsel to the Honorable Dick Armey, the majority leader of the United States House of Representatives. He's also been involved in a lot of other very interesting issues. He's worked as deputy director of the Voice of America and many other positions, including a senior fellow with the National Center for Public Policy Research and the Center for New Black Leadership. And he is a regular contributor to the Washington Times, UPI, and townhall.com. Professor Cooper, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, I'm happy to be here, and I agree with you that this is a very timely topic for us to discuss today.
Well, give us a quick overview, if you will. First, let's talk about the legal ramifications, starting with what actually has transpired. We're not talking about the paternity side, although we'll get to that, but let's just talk simply about what was happening in Anna Nicole Smith's life from a legal standpoint prior to her death.
Okay, well, let me start with a couple of things. There's a reason why people like your audience ought to be interested in this topic, and the reason is that, yes, even though there are glamorous people involved, even though there are people with lots of money and somewhat exciting lifestyles, the real question about this case is, what should our nation's policy be about how, when a person passes on, they can hand their savings, their hard-earned money, their estate, their retirement, their land to the people that they choose to? And it had been traditional policy in America that you get to decide that, and that people don't come along later and change what it was that you had decided. The issue about the whole Anna Nicole Smith lawsuit is that her former husband said in writing that he didn't wish to leave her all of his estate. And she found a legal team that said, I was married to this guy for 14 months. He gave me nearly $7 million in cash, land, jewelry, and I believe I should be entitled to at least half, or if not half, a substantial portion of his estate, a nearly $500 million estate.
Regardless of what he said, you know, while he was still alive. Regardless of what he said,
regardless
I think
of
I deserve
he said,
it.
No matter how many attorneys that he had hired, and by the way, he had more than a dozen attorneys working on his estate plan. He had it filed in a number of different state courthouses so that, you know, what if a fire came in and it destroyed this courthouse and a tornado took that one out?
Wow.
That's okay. I've got several more copies of it, as well as being kept with my attorney. So it's not like we have a mystery what his thoughts and desires were. Why is this important? Well, in this case, it's a lot of money. But if the principle holds that what you decide to do with your estate upon your death, that you're legally allowed to do, there is no claim here that he broke a law. The claim here is that we can come up with an argument for why what he put in writing, what he told his lawyers, shouldn't be believed, but what he whispered allegedly in bed is what we ought to believe is the truth. That defies common sense. In America, you actually can't have an oral representation for your will. You have to have it in writing. When this will was initially challenged, right after his death, when this will was challenged, his wife said she was going to present evidence that, in fact, the will that in all of these various courthouses and that the attorneys had was a fraud, and that instead she had the real evidence. Most people, reasonable people, would have taken that to be, well, she's got a copy of the will. She never produces a copy of the will. In this over a year-long plus, nearly a year-and-a-half-long trial that would take place, when she got a chance to testify, she would cry, she would stomp her feet, she would have a temper tantrum, all kinds of things. She would say that her husband had promised her this and is just so unfair that now there's this so-called will that essentially wrote her out. We're not, as Americans, so interested in who wins and who doesn't win as much as we are interested in the concept. If a man and his wife marry and he decides to leave everything to his wife, an uncle isn't going to be allowed, a brother, or whoever, isn't going to be allowed to come in and say, oh no, we're not going to go by the will. We're going to hire a clever legal team, and they're going to make all kinds of arguments and essentially snatch away what the husband's plan actually was.
LaHorace, let me ask you another question as it relates to why, you know, the average American wants to pay attention to this and why it is still a timely discussion. I think your point is very, very valid that if we allow them to challenge this estate, then your estate, my estate, every listener's estate, you know, could come into question. Now, the thing that leads me to is probably me and a lot of the other listeners and a lot of folks out there aren't going to have much of an estate probably worth fighting for. But that doesn't mean that this issue still shouldn't be important to us. And let me ask you, does it make sense that we should still pay attention to this? Because isn't part of what has gone on in this case as well involves the whole issue of forum shopping? And boy, if that's the case, then that's an equally important reason for us to be offended by what has gone on in this case.
All right, you asked a lot in that question. Let me start with the forum shopping issue first. You're exactly right. Lawyers and people who hire them ought not to be able to go around and pick where they're going to file the case as a way to get an advantage in the case.
That's right.
If you have the right to prevail in a case, you should have that right protected to you, as the Constitution says, no matter where you live. Forum shopping is the concept of, oh, wait a second. You know what? If I file here at this court or in this state, they're going to follow the law. I don't want to file there. I'll lose. Let me find a place, and amazingly, happens a lot often, it's California. Let's go to a place where they're likely not to follow the law, and let's have the case tried there. And all of a sudden, this is the kind of thing that could happen to a lot of people, the forum shopping issue. But there's another side of this. I mentioned the lawyers. The lawyers are actually going to get paid most of the time, no matter who wins. And so even if we don't have a large estate, let's say we barely have $15,000 that we're going to pass on. Let's say we only have an acre of land. Let's say all we have is grandma's house. The lawyers are more than happy to fight over that, and at the end of the day, have you sell grandma's house or cash in the CD or whatever the resource is just to pay them, even if no one else ends up with anything. Unless we have very straightforward, transparent rules that used to be commonplace that are just reflecting this general notion. When you die, as long as it's legal, you're allowed to be the final say over what happens to your assets. As long as that's the general principle, you can then, when a lawyer comes forward, as it happened in this case, and says to a potential client, hey, I've got a clever way that we can take this money, this house, or whatever it might be, you could get a judge to just issue sanctions and say, that is malpractice, that's unethical, that's illegal behavior, a lawyer shouldn't have anything to do with it. That's why it's so important that we not let this happen. When it's $500 million, all kinds of teams of lawyers are swarming around, fighting and coming up with clever arguments. In this case, a man dies. His will is supposed to go to probate in the state of Texas. When his wife challenged the will, she claimed at the time she was a resident of the state of Texas. When it became obvious that Texas would just follow the straightforward rules of the law and say to her, I'm sorry, you have no witnesses, you have nothing in writing, and all the whole team, as I said, mentioned a year and a half long trial, all of the whole team of witnesses on the other side overwhelmingly prove that he never intended to leave you the money, honey. Let me ask a question. You were married to a woman who refused to actually live in your house, and in fact, most of the time wouldn't even live in the same state as you. It might have affected your decision as to whether you were going to leave all of your assets to them, especially a marriage that only lasted 14 months. But regardless of what our personal judgment might be about that, the bigger question is simply, who ought to get to say? When she realized that she was going to lose, her legal team said to her, just drop this, just drop this. The state of Texas said, oh, no, no, no. Once we start this, we've got to finish it. She leaves, goes back to California, and files a brand new case. This time, it's not a probate case at all. It's a bankruptcy case. Now, I don't want to take all of the time on this, but let me just tell you why this was very interesting. Your husband's died. You're challenging it. You decide to drop it, and now you're in a bankruptcy court. Why are you in bankruptcy court? You're in bankruptcy court because one of your staff is suing you for sexual harassment for nearly $800,000. And guess what? You admit it. Wait a second. My husband was going to leave me all of his estate or most of his estate. Why would he not do that? Well, wait a second. On the other hand, you're here saying you admit that you've engaged in behavior that makes you eligible for a punishment of $800,000 in fines for sexual harassment.
That you can't afford.
At her lawyer's recommendation, because she could then say, I'm bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a second. Your husband gave you $7 million in homes, cars, cash, furs, jewelry. Where's all that money? I don't know. Now, your husband says in his will, I'm afraid my wife wouldn't be a good steward of all of these funds, so I'm not leaving it to her. Now you're in bankruptcy court. You're claiming that instead of being faithfully by your husband when he dies, you're in another area and settling a lawsuit for sexual harassment, and you're bankrupt. Her lawyers allowed her to make this claim that to most average people would just be completely and totally ridiculous. But it served a purpose. That bankruptcy judge would agree to hear her bankruptcy case, and then he said, oh, while we're at it, let's settle this probate matter.
But that had already been settled.
Well, it was in the process. We hadn't issued a ruling yet. The Texas case court would take a year and a half. This guy wouldn't even take 2 weeks to come up with a settlement for the probate while a pending case is taking place. Rather than, and this is why forum shopping is such a pernicious thing, there's already a legitimate case going forward. A specialty court is what a probate court is. They specialize in just handling all of these kinds of issues and questions. A bankruptcy court is a specialty court too, but it's not competent to really handle probate matters. It's very competent to handle bankruptcy matters. The lawyers working for Miss Anna Nicole Smith knew this, but they wanted to make extra sure that they could take advantage of this, so they didn't go into a bankruptcy court in the state of Texas. They went to a whole other state. They wanted to guarantee that whoever ended up with this case was unfamiliar with the rules of Texas, and by going to California, you guarantee that they're pretty much unfamiliar with the rules generally.
Well, but wouldn't due process then dictate that they wouldn't, and maybe due process isn't the right term, but common sense certainly would dictate.
And by the way, this bankruptcy judge issues a ruling for nearly $500 million in her favor. Due process would dictate that you or me or any American or the former estate, former representative of the estate, would have the right to have their expressions, their will, their estate plan actually considered in a neutral forum and disposed of the way that they had planned. To snatch it away this way violates the notion of due process. It also violates the notion of what's called judicial comity. We get along together. I'm a court over here, you're a court over there. I'm going to get along with you. One of the ways that I do that is, if you're working on the case, I don't work on it at the same time.
Right.
Why would we have two people handling the same case coming up with different outcomes?
Talk about judicial inefficiency.
Yes.
Judicial inefficiency.
This bankruptcy judge agreed to do it, and interestingly, now this is something that your listeners are probably more familiar with. It seems that some of these judges in the Anna Nicole Smith case have a penchant for theatrics. He started a regular press conference, practically unheard of for federal court
bankruptcy judges
to do.
Right.
He started just these press availabilities. You may recall in Florida, there were all of these people that were auditioning to get their own court TV show.
Right, and the crying.
And smoking pot and
right.
All kinds of crazy things.
And the crying. Mr. Cooper, I need to take a quick break, but I want to let you finish this thought when we come back. Can you stay with me through this break?
Oh, yeah, happy
to. All right, we're
going to
have about 10 minutes when we come back. If you've got a question of Horace Cooper, we're talking about form shopping, we're talking about estate planning, and the difference that this all makes as it relates to the Anna Nicole Smith case. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
With Horace Cooper, he's an assistant professor of law at George Mason University in Arlington, Virginia. We've got about 6 minutes left, and we're talking about Anna Nicole Smith's estate. Where do things stand right now, Mr. Cooper?
All right. Well, briefly, the Supreme Court actually heard this case. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals heard this case. The bankruptcy court in California, and so did a federal district court. The Supreme Court of the United States has sent this case back for review, explaining that the lower courts had not properly understood what their role should be, and giving the Circuit Court of Appeals another chance to, quote, get the law right. And it's my expectation that what they're going to do ultimately is one of two things. They're either going to say to all other courts that what happened in the state of Texas that started first and has finally finished, we ought to just acknowledge that that's the matter and this issue will be resolved. That's number one. Or option number two, we're going to really be inefficient, but we're going to duplicate the very same trial that took place in the state of Texas. And we're going to take nearly the year long, we're going to let all those witnesses in, and we're going to give Ms. Smith a chance, once again, to try to bring any witnesses that she has. And I think that you will have the same result, which is one side has evidence, the other side doesn't, the side that doesn't have evidence loses.
I mean, that, to me, smacks of constitutional violations.
And this is why this case is so important. Everyone is following the celebrity side of this. All of the salaciousness, but if people can win in this case, they're going to just start coming after a lot of different people because a lot of clever arguments are being put forward that essentially say, you know what, we don't really care what grandma wanted to do with the will, we don't really care what the family wanted to do with the house, someone's going to come in and take this. Now what we're looking at is a little itty-bitty baby, Danny Lynn. Are people going to take her, suck her into this vortex, sign her name up You know, she's a child, so she can't do it herself. Sign her name up with these lawyers and let them start this whole process over again? Or are they going to say to her, you know what, you lost your mother, all of your other family is practically gone, you don't even really know who your father was or is. Are we going to give you a chance to have a fresh start? Let's walk away from all of this nonsense. Let's not make you in the middle of this. Well, we're getting a chance to see that with Larry Birkhead. Which direction does he take?
Right.
Does he decide to give her the sort of close to normal life that might be possible for her? Or does he say, nope, I'm siding with the lawyers. We're going to fight this down to the last breath.
Continue the circus.
That's the question that we don't know the answer to yet. But why it's important to all of your viewers, if it happens to them and it succeeds, it can happen to you. And guess what? In this case, there's lots of money on all sides. In our case, there won't be lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone comes in and they've got a clever argument, they could snatch it from us, and mm-hmm. we couldn't even afford to fight.
Well, Professor Cooper, thank you so much for enlightening us about this. I would hope that some of the states will get involved as well, because this really does, to me, smack of the federal court stepping on the state courts when we talk about this issue. Please, we need to pay attention to this. This is forum shopping in a federalist society. There's a new article that Mr. Cooper's written that's up on the Internet. Where can they get that?
If you come to HoraceCooper.com.
HoraceCooper.com, okay.
And I have a copy of that article and a number of other issues of research that I've been doing on this subject. Lawyers, in a lot of ways, I'm one, but in a lot of ways they're becoming very predatory. And we've got to keep our eye out.
All right. Well, we'll stay on top of this, and we'll be back in contact with you. And that's it for this issue of Your Turn. Thanks so much for tuning in.
You need to call the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company. We provide affordable health insurance plans that let you choose the best combination of value.